This is Jim Lockhead, the now retired CEO of Denver Water, and you're listening to the Water Values Podcast.
The Water Values Podcast is sponsored by the following market-leading companies and organizations: by Intera, innovation and stewardship for a sustainable tomorrow; by Xylem, let's solve water; by the American Waterworks Association, dedicated to the world's most important resource; by Black & Veatch, building a world of difference; by Advanced Drainage Systems, our reason is water; by 1898 & Co., possibilities powered by experience; and by Woodard & Curran, high-quality consulting engineering, science, and operations services. This is Session 290.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utilities, resources, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGimsey.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, my name is Dave McGimsey, and thank you for joining me, and thank you for your support over the last 12 and a half years. We have a great show for you this month. We welcome Kevin Kluge, the Water Conservation Manager for the City of Austin. Also, Reese Tisdale is back for another Bluefield on Tap segment detailing the California Public Utility Commission's recent update to its small water utility acquisition policy. But before we get on to today's conversations, we always say thank you to our terrific sponsors at the top of every show, and we have some fantastic sponsors for you in 2026. The Water Values Podcast is sponsored by Intera, Xylem, the American Waterworks Association, Black & Veatch, Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., and Woodard & Curran. And that, my friends, is a terrific collection of impactful companies that have affirmatively decided to support water industry thought leadership and education, and I thank you all. And I'd like for you to do me a favor. If you work for or with any of the sponsors, please thank your boss or thank your contact at the sponsor firm and let them know that you appreciate their leadership in the industry through the sponsorship. You'd be surprised how far that simple little note of thanks will go. And as long as you're letting the sponsors know you appreciate their support of water industry education and thought leadership, why not leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever other podcast directory you access the podcast on? It'd be greatly appreciated and, of course, helps others find out about the podcast. And also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. But before we head on to the interview with Kevin, we've got a Bluefield on Tap segment with Bluefield Research's Reese Tisdale. So take it away, guys. Well, Reese, welcome to another Bluefield on Tap. How are we doing today?
All right, Dave, it's the middle of summer. The Red Sox are 25-3 over the last 28 games. And we're back in business. How about that?
Well, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about the majors. The Mariners have been a huge disappointment this year.
Well, it didn't look that way early on. So, but here we are.
Congratulations to your Red Sox. But moving on, let's move on from baseball. Okay, no offense.
That's all right.
So, a lot of news happening in the water sector. What area are we focusing on this month?
Yeah, I think something is partly up your alley. Not long after we talked earlier in July, the state of California, the Public Utility Commission, basically has rewritten, for lack of a better way to put it, its water utility acquisition policy, right? What they're really trying to do is reduce the time it takes to acquire vulnerable systems, so small failing systems. It's been a bit of a, well, I would say, broadly speaking, it's interesting that the state of California, it's a way of advocating consolidation within the state. It's not the most active state, but the timelines that it takes is putting a lot of pressure, not only on the buyer, but also on the seller as well. And so they're making moves to reduce the timing.
Yeah, reducing transaction costs, offering a carrot. You know, there are mechanisms. There are carrots and there are sticks. So I know some of the stuff I've seen, you know, more access to grant funding or low interest funding if you're participating in you know, consolidation transactions, things like that. How do you see this policy by the CPUC or California Public Utilities Commission. How do you see that impacting the market?
I mean, it is interesting, right? When you talk to smaller utilities, and it wasn't long ago, it was this past year, I was, you know, involved in a conversation with a small utility. It was taking upwards of 2 to 3 years for some of these transactions to go through, which is kind of crazy. These are small systems. I think what they're trying to do is reduce it down to 100 days for these smaller systems, reduce those transaction costs. I think what's interesting is the fact that the CPUC is, it's a way of, in a way, it's promoting or advocating for consolidation of these failing systems. It's recognizing that there's a problem, that there's a challenge, that there are too many. And particularly for these small systems getting caught up in this legal morass, is costly in slowing things down. That being said, I mean, you know, we're not, California is not, while it has fair market value legislation, I think that's impacted probably 21,000 connections. It's not the most active state. It's really, I think it ranks actually, you know, not even 10th most active state, maybe 12th or 11th or 12th. So as far as connections go, it's not the most active. I think the overall trend is nationally is these timelines have gone up dramatically. I mean, they've increased, I think when we look at all the deals, because this is something we track, how long it takes from announcement or application to approval, it's increased from 195 days in 2015 to 264 in 2025.
What do you think is behind that? Is that issues like regarding acquisition adjustments, about environmental issues, about how much investment is going to be made into the system to correct deficiencies? Is it ratepayer issues? How do you see that?
I think, you know, there is a focus even in California on ratepayer issues, right? What are they doing, more studies or better understanding what is the true impact on ratepayers? I think, I'm not going to lie, if you speak to some IOUs, they would say also it's kind of a COVID and, you know, post-COVID world in which everybody's working from home and the connective tissue in the regulatory process isn't what it was. I think there's probably some truth to that. I'm not saying that's the reason. So I don't, and hopefully people won't be offended by that. But I just think that if things are getting more complex, the regulatory environment about what does it mean for the ratepayers, the cost implications, some of the things you mentioned. Absolutely. But I think regulators, at least in this case, the CPUC is saying, wait, enough is enough. This is dragging down the long-term benefits of consolidation. So how do we incentivize it?
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, that'll be interesting to watch what the impact of the policy out there in California has on the consolidation world.
Yeah. I mean, I would throw one thing in there that's interesting just for comparative sake. One would always say, as they do, Texas is open for business. But the Texas process is really long. If anything that's bringing up the average times nationally, it's Texas.
Yeah.
Those approval times are really high and long.
Yeah. Well, Indiana's open for business too, because we have a much shorter approval timeline. So
there you go. That's, well, you're there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Amen.
All right.
All right, cool. Well, Reese, as always, thanks so much for your insights. Appreciate the knowledge, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Dave, take it easy. Enjoy the second half of the summer.
Amen. We'll talk to you. Bye.
Cheers.
As always, great information from Bluefield Research and Reese Tisdale. Now it's time for the main event, our interview with Kevin Kluge of Austin Water. So let's get that water flowing. Well, Kevin, welcome to the Water Values Podcast. How are you doing today?
Great, David. It's great to be on. It's been a long time listening to your podcast, so it's a real treat to be able to join you.
Yeah, I'm so happy you were able to come on. I mean, you were one of the early listeners that reached out to me, and I know we connected back about, you know, 10 years ago when I was in Austin for a water conference, and so when I saw your article in the Journal of the American Water Works Association, I thought, this is a perfect opportunity to get Kevin on the show. So welcome. And for those who don't know, could you give us a little, you know, background on yourself, how you came to the water sector, and how you got to your present space in that sector?
Sure, sure. Well, I'm the water conservation manager here at Austin Water in Austin, Texas, of course. And I really came to the water sector kind of in three, there's kind of three inflection points that brought me to where I am today with Austin Water. The first one was after graduating college, rather than being a high school English teacher, I went into the Peace Corps, and I taught school in a small country in the Pacific, a number of Pacific islands. And the host family that I lived with when I initially moved in, they had rainwater catchment as their water supply. They had a tank that was covered. That was the potable water supply, and a tank that was uncovered, and that was the non-potable supply. But within 6 or 9 months or so, they had completed a 1-inch PVC pipe down from the Capitol complex of the country, the water system for the Capitol complex, down to our house. And we installed a water-sealed toilet, and it really made a big impression on me, just what it meant from going from a more constrained water supply system where you're relying on water, rainwater, to one where you had treated water flowing out of the pipe. So that really made a big impact on me. Came back to the States, got a master's in natural resource economics at the University of Maine. Then I moved down here to Texas, where I got a job with the Texas Water Development Board. This is kind of the second point in my journey to water, where I am now. And the Texas Water Development Board is it's kind of a mid-size agency at this point, and they do funding for water and wastewater and stormwater projects, and then they do water supply planning and flood planning and a lot of water supply science. So they do a lot, but I got a job with them doing economic impact of water shortages initially. And then it went on for 20 years. I spent 20 years at the Water Development Board doing economic impact, projections, collection of water data, some regional water planning work, and then finally ending in a role of Director of Conservation and Innovative Water Strategies. And then I really had a chance about 5 years ago to take a position here at Austin Water. It was a great opportunity because for 20 years I had been at the state level analyzing, recommending all these demand management strategies that the utilities would actually implement. And this was a great instance where I could switch over to actually implementing many of these strategies that I'd been planning, projecting for, analyzing over the last 20 years. So that was a real great opportunity. That kind of brought me to where I am today.
Got it. So, I mean, with all this discussion of your background, I pulled the water conservation must be front and center with you from the living in the South Pacific while in the Peace Corps, and then moving on to your 20-year stint at the Texas Water Development Board in the conservation program, and now as the water conservation director at City of Austin, or water conservation manager, I should say, at City of Austin. So, with that robust experience, what are essentially the water conservation plan basics that people ought to know about?
Right. So, just starting off, a brief intro on Austin, in case listeners are not familiar with Austin, Texas. Austin is about 1 million people, 12th largest city in the country, about 245,000 customers. About 225 of those are residential customers. Capital, Texas, home of UT Austin and other colleges. We have microchip firms as well as other commercial customers. And it's important to note that for Austin, we really have a single source of water. That's the Colorado River, Texas Colorado River, and the reservoirs that store that water to the west of Austin. So Austin, there's a lot of interest in environmental issues, including water conservation. But to step back a little bit and talk about water conservation plans in Texas, they're required by the state for nearly all water utilities to have a water conservation plan and to update it every 5 years. And these plans include information about the utility and general information, as well as a description of the water conservation activities that the utility has and is or will be pursuing. And conservation is kind of a broad description in terms of these plans. It could include traditional conservation activities such as rebates or customer assistance, but it could also include water loss mitigation and reclaimed, reused water. So these plans include all this information, and like anywhere, it can certainly vary. Some plans might have a little bit, some plans might have a lot in terms of descriptions and specifics. But the one thing that every plan has and often attracts a lot of the attention are goals. The conservation plans are required to have 5- and 10-year goals for total and residential GPCD, or gallons per capita daily, essentially per person water use, as well as goals for water loss per person and infrastructure leakage index. So these particular goals often get a lot of attention from the water conservation plans. So that's kind of a nutshell of water conservation plans in Texas.
Perfect. So the other thing that your article drew a distinction on were kind of the rear view mirror goals, which is the per capita water consumption and the ILI. And so you talked about some forward-looking metrics in your article, and I'm curious about a couple of things. First off, can you talk about the importance of the forward-looking metrics as juxtaposed with the rearview mirror metrics, and kind of what each set of metrics are designed to do?
Right. Yeah, you described it really well. Where you have these larger metrics that everyone focuses on, like GPCD. But GPCD, as you were describing, is really kind of a lagging metric. That's in the rear view mirror. Whenever you see the GPCD, that's already set. It's done. You can't do anything about it. But you also have these metrics that lead to that GPCD, you know, what you were doing as you go along before you get to that point where you have to look in the rearview mirror and see that GPCD. The story really behind that article that was in the Journal of the American Water Works Association in March of this year, 2026, really came about from our recent update of the Water Conservation Plan in 2024. Now, we did one in 2019. It was a good plan. We really, as a community, we really kind of feeling our oats in terms of water conservation. We had a big drought between 2011 and 2015, and we had made a lot of gains in terms of per person water use, really coming from 162 per person per day in 2011 to the mid 120s by 2015. So we, in our 2019 plan, we had set some pretty aggressive goals in terms of per person water use and water loss targets. Unfortunately, by 2024, when we were counting things up and looking at our historical GPCD, the goal was that we'd be in 2024 at 119 gallons per person per day. Unfortunately, our five-year average was 127. So there's a big gap between what that 2019 goal had envisioned and what we had ended up with. So, of course, there's a lot of surprise, a lot of concern among stakeholders and city leaders about why we're not getting there. And the really question that came up, you know, what are you going to do now to show clearly you did not meet your goals before? What are you going to do now? And that's the question. How are we going to show city leaders and stakeholders that we're working the plans and making progress? And I think one of the ways really to describe the importance of these leading metrics, maybe to go back to an example of baseball. Like, I know you and Reese often talk a lot of baseball at the beginning of some of the podcasts. So I guess the one way to describe it is, what if you had gone to Boston and you're going to get a game with Reese going out to Fenway Park? Is that right?
Fenway's in Boston, yes.
Okay. All right, good. I have to admit, I'm a water conservation guy, but I'm not a big baseball guy. But what if you and Reese had gone out to Fenway Park and you had a game between, you know, the Mariners and the Red Sox on this particular case, and you went out to the stadium, and as you got to the stadium, it was determined that they really weren't going to keep track of runs on the scoreboard, and really they weren't going to do any stats on the ball players. The scoreboard was, you know, turned off. It was dark. And they announced that, hey, we're just going to have this game and we're going to play this game for the love of the game. You know, you can enjoy it, to watch the players and the hits, runs, what have you. You can eat the food, drink the beer, but there will be no numbers. We'll tell you at the end of the season what those numbers are. I don't know how you and Reese might feel about that game. Would you say it takes something out of it?
Yeah, it takes something out of it for sure. I was kind of jokingly going to say that based on the Mariners season who so far that, you know, that might not be such a bad thing. But yeah, it definitely takes something out of it. And it doesn't give you the feeling of accomplishment as you're progressing through the season, because you're just not tracking numbers, right? So.
Right, right. Yeah. And what if they said, this was such a great experience, you know, because it was a cool evening in the summer and you had friends and drinks, that, you know, we weren't going to do this for the rest of the season at Fenway Park. Any game, we'll just count it up at the end. But until then, just enjoy yourselves. You know, it would really take something out of it. I think one of the best quotes I'd seen out of a book from the Franklin Covey Group, Four Disciplines of Execution, was, if you're playing a game without a scoreboard, you're not really competing. You're just practicing. So turning this back around to water conservation and Austin's experiences, we needed a way to establish a scoreboard for our stakeholders and our leaders and the public that are very interested in water conservation, to show them how we are implementing this new plan, how we're going to work towards meeting these goals. And how we're going to be transparent and how we're going to be accountable. So that's really where we looked into a regular updating. We didn't see a lot of utilities that did less than annual updating, but we took kind of some ideas from the private sector, you know, the quarterly reports. Certainly we aren't going to have earnings reports, which is a good thing, but we could do it quarterly, reporting to our stakeholders in a PowerPoint slide deck that has a number of other benefits. So that's what we decided to do, these quarterly reports, to make sure everyone knew what we were doing going forward. Unfortunately, you know, as a podcast, I can't throw up a slide or show you the report itself. You know, I'd recommend anyone who's interested during the podcast or after the podcast, there's a number of ways to get there, but you could also just Google Austin Water Forward Plan and the reports would be at the bottom. But it's a 20-slide slide deck. It gives updates on water conservation activities, water loss mitigation activities, reclaimed, on-site reuse, and then conservation outreach. And for each of those, we give textual updates. We did this the last quarter. metrics. We replaced this much pipe. We did this much leak detection. We gave out this many rebates. And then some milestones going forward about various things for the different types of conservation. We also include water supply strategies, because you can't all often do one or the other, demand management or supply. So we have supply strategies from Water Forward Plan that we report on. And then finally, I think many customers, I know many observers of our quarterly report find interesting that we report our GPCD quarterly in several graphs at the end. And that's often something people find interesting, to go across the time frame and look at how our GPCD varies in the different quarters across the time. So anyway, that's kind of what we ended up with, the quarterly report. We started in Q1 of 2025, and we've done five so far, and the second quarter ends the day after tomorrow, or tomorrow rather, and we'll start on our Q2 implementation report soon after.
Got it. So one of the interesting things that I think about when you're talking about conservation plan reporting is you're looking at the forward-looking metrics as well as those lagging metrics that you mentioned, because I think the importance, right, the importance to me of the forward-looking metrics is it's the activities you're undertaking that are going to, in the long run, show up in the lagging metrics.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the levers you're going to use to try to move that rock, you know, that larger GPCD goal. You need to use the leading measures, whether they be rebates or pipes replaced or different outreach messages that are put out in the community. Those are the things. If you don't focus on those, if you don't do those, it's hard to imagine that those lagging measures are going to move.
Right. Right. You got to be proactive about you know, implementing, you know, steps in your plan to achieve those lagging metrics. You identified some issues with, you know, challenges in reporting metrics. And I think that's important to know that this isn't just a simple exercise where the numbers just show up and it's just kind of you're putting things together and on a slide deck and in an afternoon. There are challenges involved in reporting, and I think it's important to understand what some of those are. So could you kind of discuss some of those challenges that you encountered in your reporting?
Sure. Yeah, and certainly utilities are busy. Everyone has something to do. So it's not as though people are, previously been ignoring these, but there's a lot of other things going on. And so it was something to learn on how to report, where to get the data, where to put it together, how to store the data, and so forth. So that was something, a new muscle memory to create among staff, is that cadence of every quarter presenting this information about what's been going on. So that was one challenge. You know, a second challenge was learning how to report bad news. You know, inevitably there are times that the reporting is not what staff or stakeholders might want, you know, such as the first year reporting, the ILI, Infrastructure Leakage Index, actually went up. So, you know, that was an opportunity to discuss with stakeholders and people who are reading the quarterly report about what happened. But, you know, as unfortunate that is, whenever you have to report bad news, or at least news that's not as much as you'd want, is that it does demonstrate transparency. And we told our stakeholders that we're going to be transparent and tell you what it is, but if you only ever reported bad news, it would cause that transparency idea to might be called into question. So that was something that you just learned to work with, that reporting bad news.
Was it difficult to change the DNA of Austin Water in terms of getting the cadence on track and when bad news did come around to be transparent and say, you know, we didn't do as well as we thought we needed to?
It wasn't difficult, but it's just something you have to work through on asking, all right, who has this information and where is it stored? And sometimes that took a little while to develop, but it was generally, you know, within the first couple reports, we got it pretty well down on that cadence of reporting. There are, you know, some things that we are still working towards. One of the challenges is finding those best metrics to focus on, you know, as we talked about those leading measures, whether they be number of rebates or the number of compliant commercial efficiency assessments or one thing or another, which of those have the greatest impact on that final goal that you want? Those are questions that we're still working out, and it probably will continue to be working on which metrics to report that are actually the most important. And then we'll also be working on how to include yields for these strategies. Now, the strategies in the conservation plan and the water forward plan, we described not only what we were going to be doing, but we described how much we think this will be saving, because that was important. And one of the things that's often missed when setting goals, particularly for GPCD, is if you set a goal to go from 127 or to 119, that converts to gallons. You know, you have to save 3.8 billion gallons a year. So there are definitely numerical numbers you have to meet. And that's where those yields of the strategies came into effect from the Water Conservation Water Forward Plan. That we're still working on. I have to admit, we haven't got the complete product or the special sauce down yet. But we are still working to estimate those yields, whether from rebates, particularly, or enforcement actions or what have you, or from reclaimed, to make those best estimations of how much this is hitting us, these particular strategies. So that's something we're still working on. I hope that we'll be able to start including those into the quarterly reports going forward.
Right. And I think that's a great assessment, because there really is no endpoint in this, right? It's a continuum, and there's going to be constant improvement. You're always going to be gaining new information and making adjustments based on that. And so I think it sounds like you're right where you ought to be, from a data gathering and reporting perspective.
I think where we need to be, and we're going in the right direction. When we started, we certainly told our stakeholders, this is a work in progress in terms of these quarterly reporting. You know, we don't know really who else does this, so we're kind of making this, I wouldn't say we're making it up as we go along, but we're certainly developing these quarterly reports to be most effective as we go through this five-year implementation phase.
Right. So looking back, do you have some tips or lessons learned that you can share with the listeners on how you assess and track your progress through your conservation plan?
Yeah, I would say really kind of three lessons learned. First of all, you know, you got to keep score. As we talked about, whether it's at the baseball diamond or it's in the conservation plan or other demand management strategies, if these activities are important, you need to use numbers. You need to put them up on a scoreboard that folks can see. So keeping score, the numbers are important. But also the second one is that, you know, sunshine is the best disinfectant. As we discussed, you know, sometimes the numbers aren't what you want them to be. Sometimes numbers get revised. But data only gets better when it's accessible and reviewed. You know, hidden data never gets any better in quality. So while it is sometimes, you know, kind of you kind of feel a tightening up in your stomach of putting out numbers, numbers are only going to get better when you put them out. And then I guess the third one really is to focus on the implementation. These quarterly reports, initially, I think were really driven by the concern by stakeholders and city leaders of what we were going to be doing. So they were largely developed for those individuals. But I'd say it's just as important for individual staff and leaders of Austin Water to quarterly see these metrics in a, you know, a slide deck to get a better idea of what's going forward. So the implementation isn't just for our stakeholders, commissioners, council members, what have you, but it's probably even more important for us and what our staff and leadership.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for coming on. You've been absolutely great. I've learned a lot. Those were some great lessons learned. Does that translate into a different leave behind message, or kind of what is your leave behind message?
I would say the leave behind message beyond those lessons learned is simply that implementation and execution of these strategies, particularly for demand management strategies, are vitally important. Plans are important, but the execution and implementation of those strategies, of those plans, is what really needs to be done.
Perfect, Kevin. That's a great leave behind message. For those who want to find out more about you and your work at Austin Water, where can they go to get that information?
They certainly email me if they had questions. It's Kevin, K-E-V-I-N .K-L-U-G-E at austintexas.gov. But a lot of great information is on our website, austinwater.org. We'll take you to our website. You can do a search there for our Water Forward Plan, and that lists all the quarterly reports at the end of that page. Also, we had mentioned that the journal article in the American Water Works Association from March 2026, which also provides a lot of information about our quarterly reports and how we've been developing those.
Perfect. Again, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you much, David.
All right. Bye now. Kevin is just a font of information on water conservation generally, but he's really plowing some new ground on water conservation plan reporting. You know, I envision that in a decade from now, many utilities will be looking at his work and will adopt it, or will already have adopted the water conservation plan reporting framework that he and Austin Water have developed. So kudos, Kevin. I feel privileged to call you a friend. You're really doing some great work down there. Well, I'd love to know what you thought about the interview. Please check out the show notes page for information and links on this episode. Just Google the Water Values Podcast. Click the first link that comes up. That's our home on the web on the Bluefield Research website. Again, Bluefield Research and the Water Values LLC are not affiliates. They're not related companies. We just have a joint marketing arrangement. And as part of that arrangement, Bluefield Research gives the Water Values Podcast a home on its website. Well, you can email me at david.mcgimsey@dentons.com, and you can sign up for the newsletter at that landing page as well. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you make it a great day. Plus, I want to give a huge thank you again to our phenomenal sponsors. Sponsors of the Water Values Podcast include Intera, Xylem, the American Water Works Association, Black & Veatch, Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., and Woodard & Curran. This show would not be possible without those great companies and industry leaders. And again, thank you for listening and for subscribing to the Water Values Podcast. Your support is truly appreciated. In closing, please remember to keep the core message of the Water Values Podcast in mind as you go about your daily business. Water is our most valuable resource, so please join me by going out into the world and acting like it.
You've been listening to the Water Values Podcast. Thank you for spending some of your day with my dad and me.
Well, thank you for tuning in to the disclaimer. I'm a lawyer licensed in Indiana and Colorado, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as providing legal advice or as establishing an attorney-client relationship with you or with anyone else. Additionally, nothing in this podcast should be considered a solicitation for professional employment. I'm just a lawyer that finds water issues interesting and that believes greater public education is needed about water issues. And that includes enhancing my own education about water issues, because no one knows everything about water.